Good morning, dear colleagues. I am thankful to Bill Ross and the Society for giving us the opportunity on behalf of the Michel Serre Institute to speak two voices at the time of COVID. This is about the political heritage of Michel Serre. I will talk science and society rather sketchily, and Patrick de Georges will deal with the philosophical dimensions. There are 5 points in this presentation. First, the Michel Serre Institute. Why the Institute? The Institute is eight years old. I met Michel Serre for the first time in 2011. So with the engaged philosopher, we started discussions on how to make society today. It was about exploring avenues for changes in mainstream thinking, practices, technologies, policies, and lifestyles, possibly through new objects of law and new forms of institutions. To make it short, the last experiment with Michel Serre before he passed away was on food and agricultural exception. A video is actually available, we can share with you if desired. So, once having said that, I will get back to how the Institute came out. It was born in an academic course, Science and Society, at the École Normale Supérieure de Lyon, where I tried to make students aware that science without philosophy is mechanics. So the Institute is an exercise of deep inter- and transdisciplinarity. A bunch of scientists got together and we designed a sort of alliance between natural sciences, broad sense, legal studies with social and political dimensions, and the digital expertise. The object of the Institute is on resources, all resources combined, and the commons. We also have a practical dimension, the living territory, in the sense of the socio-ecological systems approach. Now, second point is why resources? We consider that the matrix, the basic matrix, the ever all-time matrix of human history, of power system, of geopolitics, of the Anthropocene, is actually bound to resources. Resources are a problem and solution at the same time. To quote Michel Serre, probably the best way to say it is we depend on what depends on us. Of note is that since the 70s, resources remained or are a hidden challenge. I am thinking about anything that happened between Limits to Growth, the report for the Club of Rome, and the common pool resources, Elinor Ostrom's defined in the socio ecosystem governance framework. The third point, what are the missions of the Institute? Well, I think we tried to come up with a bridging strategy combining a narrative, a utopia, and a methodology. Now, the narrative is about the man-nature relationship. That takes us to the natural contract. and in a very telegraphic manner. This is about a partnership, a symbiosis with the Earth. Symbiosis is a shared health. I'm speaking as a biologist on that. So what we did, starting from the natural contract blueprint, is bringing together concepts previously considered separately. And these are planetary boundaries, planetary health, the critical zone, and the critical natural capital. Concerning this last one, primarily we were concentrating on land, water, and biomass. But this takes us to Michel Serres' waffle: water, air, fire, earth, and the living. Now, concerning the methodology, actually the operational framework, we went to the notion of planetary health to deal with the indivisible common health that must take place at the three levels at the same time in the right order, meaning that the health of the ecosystems is important for the health of societies, and that health of societies is important for the health of individuals. Now, to make it short again, I think what has been achieved so far in our societies is an interesting fact. Economic and certain social growth has been possible by having an ecological and social degrowth. In other words, having dumping, social and ecological, which is an unhealthy situation. Health is a powerful political idea and tool because it has a triple connotation: a universal value, a symbolic meaning. These two are important for societal awareness and acceptance, mobilization even, and a diagnosis: what and how to measure. This is important from the scientific and system, complex system point of view. So where we wanted to head on was to work on adjusting resources to basic needs of populations without compromising the life support capacity of the biosphere. And this confronted with the predatory market dominance. Now the outcome was a toolbox we call Resources Planetary Health Toolbox. Details and more explanations are available in the last report of the Institute, where you can find actions, partnerships, publications. So then the question is, what's the use of it? This takes me to point number four. I think it's fine having the resource planetary health toolbox, but is that sufficient to define priorities in the era of embedded, of entangled challenges? What comes first? So to answer that question, we went to the notion of planetary boundaries and revisited the field. Those boundaries that are considered individually, we've aggregated them to describe a double disruption system with subordinated entities. Now, the first disruption is that brought up by the food systems in the sense of the health issue. There we went to work on food democracy and agricultural exception. This is an important issue in the French theoretical field, but I suggest you have a look at the Havana Charter in 1948, which is an extremely interesting document in this context. For the food system and health dimension, the disruption and the dimension of that disruption, solutions are known. So I think there are possible ways to deal with the food system and health problematic. Now the second disruption is the global physico-chemical disruption and health. That means the global pollution. And what goes with it is the cocktail effect. I think that's one of the biggest ever issues science and society have been confronted with. Simply because at present there is no solution as such, unless radical changes are coming in. So with these two priorities of the resources planetary health toolbox, what is expected is that we can identify positive feedbacks and solutions to lower rank challenges, just to name climate and biodiversity. With this in mind, I'm coming to the last point, point five, with the question, is this toolbox a sufficient deconstruction, reconstruction, and productive utopia? Is this the route to a desirable future? To answer that question, we made an inventory of the landscape of narratives and visions. And it is obvious that we are having there a diversity, I would even say an inflation of narratives and visions. Next to it, we have also an inflation of propositions, a kind of laundry list propositions of what to do or what not to do. So with this landscape in front of us, our question is a synthesis, is a consensus needed on these narratives, visions, propositions, before we can articulate the many initiatives and alternatives to the current ultra-liberal bloc? So, on our side, we have a real-life experiment going on the Bio Valley, which is the Drôme River basin. And with that in mind, my answer would be yes. Such a synthesis is necessary. So I have a proposition to the European Philosophical Society, because I think it's the right place for confronting this landscape of narratives and visions through the lens of coexisting Anthropocenes. I insist on Anthropocenes. So Patrick de Georges has an idea on that and the red thread to it. Well, I think I'm done, and I thank you very much for listening to this.